This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, Philip, and hello to everybody out there today. I got to say something quick, all right?
Go for it.
Big coup in China today. I don't know if you heard about it.
No.
They had a big coup. They got rid of some of the big cheeses, and they got other cheeses in. They're probably the same type of crooks. But the point is that China is actually at the point they can have a coup. Now, for all you Chinese people out there, let's get rid of all of those people. Let's make it a country of the people for the people, okay?
Well, you know, the last time you talked about this, we got thrown off the air.
I know. I better never go visit China.
No.
They'll just say, we don't know, he vanished. But good for the way we're happening in China. They got rid of leaders. They got new leaders coming in there. China, you're good people. I don't have a mean bone in my body against the Chinese people. Your government. It's the worst government I've ever seen in my life or heard of with that. So, anyway, good luck to the new Chinese people, whoever they are, the new government. So, back to the United States and back to America, back to motorcycles, and back to you and I, buddy.
That's it. Well, you know, Bill, I got a little interesting news here.
More than China? Okay.
Yeah, more than China. This is out of Australia, but we got Brad's going to call in from Australia. And
talking about China.
No, you shouldn't be talking. They're going to start again. Okay, hopefully we got them at bay for a little bit. But what it is it's the Western Australia is to introduce Australia's toughest bikie laws. And they're set to get what the state government claims to be the toughest bikie laws in the country.
It's got to be the toughest biker laws in the world.
Exactly.
Those poor guys over there are just getting shafted.
Yeah, so Brad's gonna give us some updates on that. And
okay, Brad.
We'll go from there. But I'd like to, I'm going to play this clip so everybody gets a little idea of what's going on.
And what's this clip?
To get what the state government claims are the toughest bikie laws in the country, which will even ban gang members from texting each other. The Attorney General says it could end bikie clubs here within a decade, but lawyers warn the laws could send gang crime further underground.
Attorney General Christian Porter wants to take the law out of WA bikies.
That may take a decade, but this legislation will be devastating for biking acts.
A series of bikie laws the government says are Australia's toughest will be introduced into Parliament within weeks. Here's how they'll work. A judge can label a bikie gang a declared criminal organisation, or DCO. Individual bikies could then be targeted and put under a control order. That would stop them contacting gang members, visiting banned locations, or giving the club money. The government says this will isolate individual bikies and make it almost impossible to legally contact their bikie mates. Emails, letters, phone calls to each other will all be banned, even text messages. The United Motorcycle Council of WA released a statement saying it'll abide by any laws as long as they don't undermine the democratic rights of all law-abiding citizens and do not forget the freedoms our forefathers fought and died for. Michael Chidori is the rebels' lawyer for the past decade.
The police know this won't crack the bikies. The police know that. This is, all this does is just drive organisations underground.
Members of a declared criminal organisation will face tougher penalties than anyone else. Breaching a control order or contacting another bikie could mean 2 years jail, 5 years if it happens again.
Their days are definitely numbered.
This is a great headline, but we've got to wait to see whether what's presented to the Parliament is in fact constitutional.
Blake Johnson, 7 News.
Well, Bill,
what are they going to do, cut off everybody's thumbs?
I guess.
Well, that's the way we have to deal with that. Cut the thumbs right out.
Because, we know whatever happens there, it's going to happen in Canada.
It's one world.
It's going to happen here.
Anytime law enforcement finds something that works, it's going to slide right over.
Right, because it's just like as we say, whatever happens on the West Coast is going to go east. Whatever is east is going to come west.
We get every now and then comments from people, well, you guys talk about Canada and Australia a lot, and you guys somehow talk about the tough negative image of Australia. Folks, we're not putting Australia down. We're trying to say these people, our brothers and sisters in Australia, they're fighting the fight for all of us. And if we're showing something negative, it's because this is how they live over there. Pay attention to what's happening in Australia. Pay attention to what's happening in Canada. It'll be here next.
That's true.
Every time I think, oh, man, we got it bad and all that, I just hear stories about Australia. I hear stories about Canada, and I think, well, I tell you what, this is a great country to be in the United States of America. In fact, the best country in the world.
Well, not for long, though. We're getting fucked with left and right.
Well, it is. I don't know what's going to happen to my grandchildren, how they're going to grow up in this country. I've also often said that if my grandparents were long dead, if they were to wake up and look around, they wouldn't know the country they're in now. Because that's not the country they died in years ago. So
no.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, if...
We talk to a lot of vets, though. There's a lot of solid young
vets
out there. Men and women out there, and you and I are doing several events and all that. I have nothing but respect for all the military. I'm just thinking the overwhelming power of the government is making changes on a broad sweep that I don't think how we can adjust or stop anything, you know?
Uh-huh.
There was an article in today's paper that one Marine who refused to... He said he would not accept any order from the president that was unlawful. He refused to do it, and they're kicking him out of the military. And yet, correct me if I'm wrong, as an American soldier, don't you have a responsibility not to follow an illegal order?
Right.
But the Marine Corps is saying now, because he said that, they're kicking him out of the military. So now he can't even say something? If he did it, and they went to trial, and they kick him out, that's one thing. They're kicking this guy out just because he said he would not follow an illegal order.
Well,
that's his responsibility.
Because, we could talk about this real quick,
yeah,
Bill, and then I'd like Brad to call in after that.
Yeah.
If he can. He's in the chat room, so I know he can.
I heard he's at death's door. Is that true?
Who?
Brad.
Ah, he's got a cold, he said. So I told him to get some cough drops. They worked for me earlier.
All right.
Well,
let's talk about the young Marine.
You know, it's like everybody's, you know, I'm sitting here huffing
and puffing. You're sucking on that cigarette over here. Not caring that secondhand smoke is taking my life away from me. You go right ahead and enjoy that smoke. Oh, wait. Hey, I forgot everybody. I'm 63. I'm 63 years old. What the hell's that going to do for me, for Christ's sakes? All right, let's go back about that Marine real quick while I wait for Brad, all right?
Yeah.
He says that he will not follow the president's order if it's an illegal order.
Right.
But that is a soldier is what you're supposed to do. You can't say, yeah, I killed these people because I was ordered to do it. An illegal order is something we were told that you're not supposed to do.
Well, you know.
So this is where, you know.
Well, here's what it is, Bill. This guy's name is Sergeant Gary Stein. And he respects the office of the president, but he's not agree with Obama's policies.
Yeah.
Which is true. We all don't agree with, you know, but that's
as
that's
an
because,
American's right.
That's because when we're Americans, we have that choice. We can make our own choices. He started a Facebook group, and it was critical of Obama. And, it, you know, so what happened was the Marines on Wednesday told Sergeant Gary Stein, a Camp Pendleton Marine who started the Facebook page called Armed Forces Tea Party, that he was in violation of a Pentagon policy banning troops from political activities. Stein, a 9-year member of the Corps, said he started the page to encourage fellow service members to exercise their free speech rights. He also criticized Defense Department Secretary Liam Panetta for his comments on Syria. The Marine Corps said in a statement that Stein's commanding officer ordered a preliminary inquiry on March 8th after receiving allegations that Stein posted the political statement violating the Pentagon's directives. After reviewing the findings of the preliminary inquiry, the commander decided to address the allegations through administrative action. I'm completely shocked that this is happening, Stein said. I've done nothing wrong.
He hasn't done anything wrong yet. Nothing.
I've done nothing wrong. I've only stated what our oath states, that I will defend the Constitution and that I will not follow unlawful orders. If that's a crime, what is America coming to?
You and I are active military. Excuse me, we're retired. We're veterans. I meant to say we were told you cannot follow an illegal action.
No.
And you can't go. And this guy just saying that he will not do an illegal act, and they're throwing him out.
Right. He said he applied to extend his service, which is set to expire in a few months. But he said, in addition to being discharged, he would like to have his rank. He would like to have his rank reduced to lance corporal if he is proven to be in violation. He said he was removed from his job at Marine Corps Recruiting Depot in San Diego on Wednesday and given a desk job with no access to computers. So he was down there. I think he was a DI, Bill.
Huh.
I think he was doing his DI duty. But according to now, and that's really a place to do that. You got that 55 or 60 captive audience that you're molding.
Yeah. Talk about a groundswell grassroots organization.
Exactly.
How many people going to pay attention?
But according to the Pentagon directives, military personnel in uniform cannot sponsor a political club, participate in any TV or radio program or group discussion that advocates for or against a political party, candidate, or cause, or speak at any event promoting a political movement. Commissioned officers may not use contemptuous words against senior officials, including the defense secretary or the president. He was first cautioned about this in 2010 after he launched his Facebook page. But, you know, the other thing, Bill, is, you know, if you go for a job interview now, they ask you. They look on your social media. They ask you, you got a Facebook page? And then they ask you for your password.
They want to, yes, that's crazy. Well, they never get me, of course. Cause,
no,
you know,
so that's why this guy, he had to give up his password to get into it. And that's when they jammed him up.
But let's put this in a nutshell if we can. All he's saying is he will not follow any illegal order. So that's all he's saying. And before that statement, bam. So I don't know. Brad's trying to ring in. Maybe Brad's got so much cold medication in him now he's having a hard time following the prompts.
No. It's just, Brad, if you call back in and I see I was reading something. That's why I wasn't looking at the switchboard. So if you could do that again, I'll bring you in as soon as I see it.
He's on a third bottle of NyQuil now, for God's sakes. Get him in quick before he passes out.
And, Amy, no, you don't have to switch over or anything. I can pull it off your page if I got permission to do that. So you can let me know in the message. But, let me see if he's still in. No. Yeah, there he is right there. Hello, Brad.
Yeah, hi, Phil. How are you going, mate?
Good. How are you? It's cold.
Mate, very well indeed. Thank you. I have a little bit of a cough, as I mentioned. However, it'll be all right. I took my hardened up tablet a moment ago.
Brad, this is Bill Kennedy talking. We've talked about
Good.
Over and over about you guys have got a rough road to travel down there in Australia. And, of course, the rest of us world, we're watching you. Because what happens to you eventually will happen to Canada down to America with that. But can you tell us a little bit about what the hell is going on?
Yeah, sure. What's occurred, Bill, is that over the last few years, various state governments, and I'll give a bit of a synopsis first if I can of Australia, so we make it easier for listeners to understand. There's essentially about 8 states or territories in Australia. Many of them have passed legislation, organised crime legislation, which they've used the bike clubs as a smoke grenade to get it through Parliament and under the public's nose. This legislation has been challenged twice, one piece of legislation from South Australia and the legislation from New South Wales, 2 states, have both been challenged in Australia's High Court. By clubs, and the clubs have won on both occasions. What we're seeing now is we're seeing the other states, in this case Western Australia, introducing this quite outrageous legislation. And we know that they'll introduce the legislation, we'll challenge it in the High Court, and the changes that come from that, or the recommendations that come from the High Court, another state will then put in into legislation and place that before the public, which will then have to be challenged. Basically, they're going for deep pockets, and basically, it's government, us trying to fight the government, and it's going to end up as a dollars and cents matter, where we will not have the funds to continue to fight it. Fundamentally speaking, in Australia about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, in my state in Queensland, a number of us saw what was happening, and the United Motorcycle Council, the UMC, was formed. It's probably something that would not sit well in the United States, but it was necessary to bring all clubs together to have one voice, despite differences, despite you know, differences going back 30 or 40 years. It was necessary to put them aside because we're in a position where, I guess, essentially, if we use the saying, "My enemy's enemy is my enemy," was the case. And the UMC kicked off. All 17 outlaw clubs in Queensland joined the UMC and successfully marketed and engaged marketing consultants and got media coverage, and have managed to in Queensland in particular, to keep things pretty well, you know, under control from a government perspective. The other states have also set up UMCs modelled on ours, and are pushing... And are pushing hard to fight against these laws. The really bad thing about these laws, I'll pause for a breath, I guess, but the really bad thing about these laws is that the police commissioner in each state is normally the person who makes the application to declare a club a declared organisation or a criminal organisation. This application can be supported by sealed evidence, and that evidence isn't even viewed by the judge. He simply has to accept that the synopsis put on the front of it is true. The organisation cannot cross-examine the evidence, nor see the evidence, or hear the evidence that is being presented against it. So, you know, you simply cannot fight it. It was a number of these things that in the Winehouse versus New South Wales case that were highlighted by the High Court of Australia as being quite unacceptable, simply from a natural justice perspective. What is starting to occur? You, go on, yep.
Okay. In your organization now, the United Council, do you have at this point in time one person you think can speak for everybody? Or is it still everybody coming together that says United Council? Do you have a figurehead that you think can speak for everybody? May I ask you that question?
In the UMC in Queensland, it's a very well structured organisation. There's a president who will speak on public affairs matters, and one other who will also speak to the media. On public affairs matters. It's quite a well-structured and organized situation, I guess.
Well, you do say you have a president, but forget the semantics, because I don't really care about semantics. We certainly have got organizations here. Do you have... What we lack in America is a person that can stand up and speak for all of us. Now, you're saying the president is entitled to make statements on behalf of everybody, but do you feel you have, like, a person or a leader in your area, your state, that really speaks for everybody, not just the president making statements? Is there some type of a personality, a persona in your area that you can rally behind? Because we lack that in America.
Are you talking about like that video I played before where the guy is reading from the newspaper?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was he from, the Finks? The big
ball? No, he was pretty.
Yes.
He was pretty,
the big ball-headed guy?
He was pretty a good personality. See, over here, I listen to organizations, and we've learned a lot of stuff and all that. I find too many organizations are trying to cover their own selves, their own background, ego, attitude, and all this bullshit I got to deal with all the time. The MROs, the motorcycle ride organizations, fighting their own little piece of the pie. I don't know why we, in America now, we the motorcycle community cannot come together. Why I can't realistically shake a Yamaha, Kawasaki, Suzuki friend's hand and say, look, we drive down the same streets, the same potholes. We have a possibility now with the same police pulling us over. We need to come together. And, Brad, whatever reason is, we in America, we must be dumber than doorknobs. We can't come together. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you guys are coming together, or do you feel you're coming together?
Oh, look, we've certainly come together. You know, what's happened with the United Motorcycle Council in Queensland, it's actually it's got several subsections to it now. There's the what we commonly refer to as the 1% section. Then we have the United Social Clubs of Queensland. So that'd be like your MROs, I guess, or like your local Joe Citizen Easy Rider type, back patch type guy or front patch or whatever. And then we also have a cell developing, which is like a military motorcycle club cell. Now, all of those cells work together, and they work together, really quite well. Don't get me wrong. There's the occasional disagreement, but what we've managed to do is have people identify that personal requirements and personal wishes and personal vendettas and egos need to be put aside so that we follow the party line and we follow and we push as a united force. You know, the government will always try and divide us, to conquer us. So the answer to your question is we're coming together really well here. We've also engaged now with the Motorcycle Riders Association of Queensland, a relatively small organisation. However, it does have patronage on government boards and committees. So we're moving down that path as well.
See, I think in America, we can't not get over generational hatred. I'm not speaking for any organization. This is Bill Kennedy speaking. I don't think we get beyond generational hatred. And by that I'm saying is, say you have a motorcycle organization, a club, and they've got several chapters. And we're asking everybody, as you just said, put that behind you. We've got to come together. Well, one chapter is saying, we lost 5 people to this other bike club. You other chapters in the same organization, you're saying, come together. We've got dead bodies. We're not putting that behind. Yeah. I speak to people. I see that there's still this hatred. Now, again, 20 chapters, one chapter's lost 5 people. They're not going to forgive it. We in America, again, we must be dense or slow or something. We can't come together and see the big picture the way you guys are.
The same situation, or no, it's not the same situation. America's a much bigger country, of course, and much more populated than Australia, and and is in many, many ways, from a human rights, Bill of Rights, all that sort of stuff, is much more advanced than us, and probably than we'll ever be, to be honest with you. What I think has been possibly beneficial to us is that being a smaller country with a smaller number of charters or chapters or whatever in clubs, I guess that although there's bodies in the fields over here as well, I think the capability of getting together because people know each other and can say, okay, look, yeah, sure, I really, really dislike these people and I will never stop that dislike for them. However, I am prepared to hold that dislike and not go to lunch with them, not go to dinner with them, not hold hands with them or marry them or anything, but have them by my side, not in front of me and not behind me, but by my side, so we work together to fight against our joint destruction. And I think that's the way we've been able to do it.
Well, I do understand what you're saying, the words, and it seems such a tremendous Herculean task for those of us over here to put the past behind us. I'm not just speaking for a few friends. I'm saying that there are so many people in different clubs that say no. And even though the main chapter, the mother chapter, may put an edict down saying we will all do this, there's a chapter somewhere saying no, 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 the body count is not equal. And this is where I see it happening. And then the new guys coming into the club, they don't like the fact that the old guys were at the war, the old guys did all this, and the new guys, they don't have any history or anything. They want to get their feet wet and all that. So I don't know how what you're saying makes sense to you. I just don't know how we can still get over that in America. We can't even get the MROs to sit down and agree on how we can do this. What I've been looking for, and I speak at the different things here and there, I'm looking somewhere for one day I can find somebody that's going to stand up and speak at a program I'm at, and I can look at that man or woman and say, this could be somebody that could pull us together. Because unfortunately, it's like the Republican race right now in America. We don't have no front runner. We just got a bunch of guys running around. In the motorcycle world here, well, I'll just cut it down to California. We just lack a person that can stand up and say, I speak for all motorcycles. Brad, I think that's what keeps shooting ourselves in the foot over here.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I hear what you're saying and I respect what you're saying. And, you know, to be honest, Leo, I don't know enough about the motorcycling scene in America to even, you know, consider, you know, disrespecting anyone by, you know, giving advice on things. So I think the only thing that I would say is that it's very difficult. You know, it's not an easy thing. It takes time, and you know it's and some days are diamonds and some days aren't. I mean, there's bad, you know, some of the things that have to be resolved, you know, behind the scenes still exist. However, it's kept very, very private, and you know, once again we come back to we've all accepted that, you know, if this does not occur, the lifestyle that we know will go. The reason, and this also, getting back to the legislation also allows, it's not only club members, Bill, it's associates. It's anyone who the government wishes to nominate as a person associated with a motorcycle club or, you know, whatever. They can declare them as a and give them a no-contact order. So with that in mind, we've been able to pass that message reasonably well. I think we're probably maybe 55 to 60% to where we need to be with passing that message, and we're continually looking at different strategies to do it. But fundamentally, again, getting back to the main thrust of the discussion, is that to get harmony or to get a force multiplication factor in place where you guys can fight different laws that are going to come in, there's just got to be agreement on some basic tenets. It's not about a long-term relationship. It's not about, you know, forgetting. It's not about things like that. It's about prioritizing the risk to your club.
How about some of the politicians? Are you guys looking at, you have like list of politicians you're supporting, politicians you're voting against? How are you trying to get the voting? And do you see eventually the motorcycle community getting its own people in politics? Or is that way, way out of reality?
It's a very, very good point. There's a party in Australia that's been going for about 4 years called Three, as in FREE Australia, which the founder of actually rides a motor scooter, you know, like a 125cc motor scooter, but he's becoming more 1% than many 1% people that I know with his frustration towards government. Regarding politicians, the political landscape in Australia is a joke. It's an absolute farce. I mean, it's worse than you guys. Our politicians here have now blatantly just lie. You know, we don't think we will ever get any serving politicians to come on board because it may influence their retirement fund or their appointment to a board of another company or something when they finish in politics. There's been a member of a club here has run for parliament a couple of times, or once, sorry, and he didn't quite get up. We've got a state election tomorrow, and he was going to run. However, he couldn't run. I think what we will probably end up looking at is looking at probably 4 years out is looking at getting people into politics. It's a natural progression from where we are now. If we fail to at the moment we've got leverage with some politicians, we've got leverage with some people who listen, you know, but they won't, I guess, publicly, you know, go out there for us. So we really need to get our own people in there. And I guess that, you know, look, you know, we live in a democracy, and it's by far from perfect, but at the moment it's the best option we've got. So the only real thing we can do is try and get people in there, but that's not a short-term goal. I mean, it's not something we can achieve in a year, 2 years, 3 years. It's something that, you know, if we get someone in the next state elections, for example, that'll be 9 years to have got someone in there, you know? So that's where I think we sit on that.
I'd like to tell you that in our small little corner of the world, Screwdriver and I, and when our city, when we have a new mayor, we give the mayor 1 week, and then I set appointment up. We meet with the mayor. I want to know what the mayor's policy is. I want to know how they're going to divide up my area, where is going to be the impact, are the police going to focus on this here. I want to know what this person's program is. When we find we have an officer that's abusing their authority, we set appointments up at the police station. Screwdriver and I go down, ride our motorcycles to the front door, sit down, and we sit and have discussions. Internal affairs, supervisor, whoever the hell wants to be there. We realize that the only way we can fight this is from within. We need to know that when we pull up on our motorcycles, the cops go, oh, here they are again. Yeah, here we are again. We are United States citizens riding on United States roads, taxpayers, veterans. We realize we have to fight the system from within. We can't yell and scream and all that and say F this, F that. We have to speak to them articulately, and we have to stop them when they get out of a line. An abusive police officer must be reined in. We are not adversarial against police or the politicians, but they got to be accountable. That's how we feel on that.
I agree with you totally. You're totally correct. The structure of Australian government is a little different to the US, and it's a 10-second explanation. Our local council, which, you know, like our mayors and our I guess counties, I guess. You'd have a mayor of a county, would you?
No, we'd have a mayor of a city. We have a governor of the state, but no, each city would have its own mayor. Counties are...
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. No, that's right. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
You're right.
Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, well, see, I understand to be that, you know, each county, for example, in the U.S. will have its own... LEOs. It's got its own law enforcement sort of capability within the county. Am I correct with that assumption?
County supervisor, the coroner. Yes, so you're close enough, yeah.
Okay. In Australia, we don't have that. We don't have that layer where you can create relationships at that mayoral, you know, or county or city type level. The police agencies in Australia are state police. There is nothing underneath state police. So, and then on top of that, we have federal police, which have authority across Australia. So stepping back a bit from that, the level we have to engage at is we have to engage at state level.
Yes. Phil, if you want to jump in and say something, what do you want?
Well, we have that now, but we have, you know, Homeland Security pulled me over at 3 o'clock in the morning the other day.
You know, but we've utilized Homeland Security.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a small example. We had a problem with this people raising some money, and I guess I won't say state or anything. I don't want to get too much trouble with it. I actually called up Homeland Security and asked for them to examine these people. And they came back and said, this is a crooked organization and all that, and we helped these people that got screwed get some of their money back. So I'm not afraid to go and tell our government, hey, I'm a taxpayer. I want to know what's going on. You cannot sit there and keep complaining. Like you get a pebble in your shoe. Damn it, go up and talk to these people. Be articulate. Target, don't be saying F that. Stand up for your rights.
Oh, look, you've got to. You know, that's really, really important. I think there is also, you know, when it comes to that, and we've found this to be exceptionally difficult also, is that the distrust that exists between, you know, us and them has been and is almost, you know, insurmountable. That's one of the reasons why there are, you know, two people, you know, kind of nominated from within the UMC who can talk to people and can do things such as that. Some clubs here have been doing some different things where with all the club members' consent, for example, when there's a poker run on or something like that, a couple of members will go and talk with the police and with the task forces dedicated against bikies and say, rightio, this is what we intend to do. What are you going to do? We don't want mass pullovers. We don't want, you know, these so-called random drug swipes, and we don't want you random breath testing 600 motorcyclists four times during the poker ride. What do you want us to do so that we can achieve that aim? And that's been quite successful with a number of clubs. However, the number of people who are allowed to have those discussions is very, very limited for obvious reasons.
Well, at Christmas time, my brother Mike Kennedy and myself, we have Kennedy's Custom Cycles, Harley Davidson Shop in Oceanside. We had our Christmas party. We had 600 people there. By taking the time to arrange it, I rerouted city buses. I rerouted the fire department, let the police know that was going on, had a first aid stand available. Everything that their concerns were, we addressed it before. And I even requested, should they wish, to have a senior, not a newbie, a senior officer wants to drive by in the cop car, keep his horn and wave, and then keep going. I think that the more you let the police know what to allay some of their fears.
Yeah.
And do we want to do? But again, it goes back to, I've had to learn, we have to work, we have to fight them within the system. We can't just say F them and run our own. It don't work.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I think that it tends to work that way. Recently, my local charter of a club very close to us ran the most successful poker run that has ever been run in Australia. And there was liaison that occurred. However, there were certain things that were kept from the police, and one of those was that 30 minutes before the run left, seven lawyers arrived, headed by the boss of Queensland Civil Liberties, and that threw a spanner in any. I guess, ideas that police may have had. And it was very openly put to police that, you know, the lawyers are here to record any breaches of the law or anything such as that for the purpose of judicial challenge. And that kept, you know, both sides really, really balanced. I think it was a good thing. It's been described as a bit of a masterstroke by numerous people. But I think, you know, getting back onto this, these laws and things like this. Historically speaking, you know, Australia and Canada are the test beds for laws coming into the United States. The case to point would be the Port Arthur shootings in 1996. And after that, of course, was the subsequent gun buyback confiscation scheme, which essentially disarmed most of Australia. It was a few years after that where you guys had your gun laws changed, where, you know, magazine capacities, et cetera, were reduced and so on and so forth. I fear that what we're seeing now is, you know, throwing everything at us to see what we're going to do so that the legal eagles in the US and in Canada can process the information and get the wording correct for what they're going to do.
Well, you know, they changed the open carry laws here. You know, you can't do it no more because people were getting nervous. But you can carry a loaded shotgun or a rifle now. So I was talking to somebody up north about making me a little bracket so I can carry a shotgun on my bike now.
Now, one of the problems we're having in California is we have a lot of people like Ted Nugent and running around saying, yeah, keep your weapons. The government is going backdoor on us. They're making ammunition almost impossible to come by.
Right.
So my people that carry a lot of weapons, they say, Bill, we still can get weapons, but the government is cutting and denying and restricting our ammunition. Same situation, getting their way done, but they're trying to make it more acceptable to us, I guess.
I get it. You know, I wasn't aware of that, and I think that's I don't like what they're doing, but, you know, from my perspective as a war fighter, it's a very smart way of doing it. You know, if you say, for example, okay, you know, weapons or ammunition factories, you're not to produce 0.50 cal, or you're not to produce 7.62 mic, you know, or if you do produce 7.62 mic, it's got to have a muzzle velocity less than, and da da da. So I think that, you know, that what they're doing is they've seen things in Australia and the UK and things like that and gone, well, people did buck a fair bit about the guns, so we'll just screw around with their ammunition supplies.
Yeah, it's just getting worse. I mean, you know, I work with a lot of guys, a lot of older guys who are making their own, you know, or they're trying to, you know, they're trying to help guys out and make stuff for them, and they're having a hard time getting powder.
Yeah. Yeah, components, et cetera. Yeah, it's the sort of thing that, you know, overseas, that's, you know, where you guys were serving, and you know, where I did my stuff, that's exactly what we do. Is we know we can't control weapon, you know, weapon access there, all buried in the sand, but what we can do is we make it really hard to get ammo.
Right. And like out here, any given day of the week, you can pick up the paper. You'd find a couple of guys from the base at Camp Pendleton get caught up in L.A. selling grenades,
sure,
ammo.
The street gangs.
Yeah. Selling grenades is probably a little bit, probably a little bit much. However, I am in the market for some. I'm just joking for all those FBI and CIA idiots that are listening. You know, a little joke from Australia. But you can understand, you know, in a large organisation such as the US military, once again, I mean, you have an army that is probably 20 times bigger than ours. So, you know, you're going to get people who will sell ammo and who will sell, you know, other you know, munition, you know, nomenclatures to make money. It's just the way it is. I mean, you know, Australia's not had no events such as that. We had in the 80s, and we had to track these down. We had two M60 machine guns stolen from an armory in Victoria, which ended up in Northern Ireland. How they got there, well, I don't know. They might have had wings or something. Who knows? But, you know, so certainly those sort of, you know, similar type of events, you know, do occur out here. I'm trying to think of how to describe, you know, or compare Australia and the United States. I mean, and we all always must remember that, you know, if it weren't for the United States of America, Australia would have been eating sushi in 1942, you know, and that's something that we will never forget. You know, we owe everything we have to the USA. And, you know, we demonstrate that with our support in every, you know, combat situation that occurs. But I think that we're looking at, you know, it's kind of like a Pluto and Mercury sort of situation, you know, where the United States is this big, massive, we have population and a high, you know, cross demographic of different races and things like that, where Australia is a smaller, much smaller place. We've certainly got a broad spectrum of different, you know, races and things here. However, being smaller, less people, it's probably easier to organise things because people, you know, will be only two or three times removed from each other. People will know of each other. I don't know if that helps.
Oh, explain it a little bit more. It does. When my ancestors came from Galway Bay, Ireland, we went into Ellis Island and went to South Boston. I grew up in an all-Irish neighborhood. The next neighborhood to me was an Italian neighborhood, English neighborhood, black neighborhood. In my Irish neighborhood, there was no crime because if you were to commit a crime, somebody would have called up and told your parents where you came home.
Yep.
The fact that it was, and that's how I see Australia's sense, the fact that they're all kind of related, it's kind of all together. Now, unfortunately, in America, we've become so fragmented. We're all stretched out everywhere. Brad, I got lost in that conversation a second. Do you have any contacts with Canada and with America where your organization is kind of disseminating information, sharing information, or is that still down the road yet?
I think that's down the road at this stage. There's informal sort of conversations and informal chats with people. And, you know, there's obviously – a percentage of people over there that you know want to go down the path that we've gone down, I guess. But I'm not saying our path is right. I mean, it's just a path, and it's a good path to examine to see what we did wrong, because we did a lot of things wrong, and you know you can avoid a lot of speed bumps, you know. So I guess, you know, the conversations to date have been informal. I don't know that either side is really ready yet. You know, I mean, it's we're trying to bail the swamp, you know, with a bucket, you know, and we just keep going underwater with these different things occurring. And I think that at this stage, with the greatest respect, the capability, not the wishes of many people in the USA, but the capability to achieve a united front is still embryonic.
Yeah.
Well, just something everybody might keep in the back of mind, because we do have people from Canada listening. Of course, America's listening, and Australia.
Oh, they're listening all over the world.
You know, these are thoughts that we all have, and until we can put our petty grievances aside, we're going to be treated like that. We're going to be treated as fragmented. You know, the government is happy to keep organization away from my organization. They'll keep us at odds. If we can ever step up to the plate, if we can find the leaders that we can trust to step up to the plate, be very, very interesting to us.
I believe that I believe you do have the leaders there. I do. I believe that strongly. And you know, at a point in time when they are identified or they wish to step up and do something, I think you'll find that you'll mobilise with probably even more passion and enthusiasm than we do in Australia. You know, because to be honest, we're a pretty sort of laid back, you know, race down here where nothing matters, mate. Yeah, let's just go and have another beer, you know. Whereas there's a lot of passion within the United States that is very good, and I think you guys can harness that and get results a lot quicker than we did.
Brad, when I'm speaking to large organizations, I'm looking out in the crowd at the men and women there, and I'm looking, is the leader that I'm looking for, are they in this audience? And I try to encourage people, if you think you can give some time, you can think of yourself, step up to the plate. I think people are content to let people like myself speak and other people speak when I think that I don't set the bar high enough. So every time I speak, I look in the crowd, is there a man or woman, is today the day I'm going to meet the person to pull us together? And I think people are just willing to let a few of us do a lot of work, and they're sitting back. That's our problem out here.
Well, that's the same thing, Bill, with that. If 10 people get a ticket, 9 of them are going to go pay it because they don't want to deal with it. They'd rather have somebody else do it.
Yeah, let's let the one guy go and listen what he does and all that.
You know, it's like all the people that call me up and ask me to help them with the tickets.
Yeah.
I tell them what to do, tell them how to do it. I actually go as far as filling the things out for them, and then they just pay the ticket.
It's easier just to go along. You know, it's easy to get. We just have that problem over here. We just can't get the full commitment yet. And believe me, we are watching what you're doing because you guys are on the front line. See, the sink or swim, and we don't want you guys to sink, believe me. So we're watching everything.
Well, we can't sink, mate. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things here and it doesn't. We're getting people who aren't in the scene involved now, you know, just citizens. And, you know, and they're seeing now that all this, you know, secret evidence and declarations and total destruction of family units. This legislation also bans people who are declared or who have non-association orders from working in just about every industry there is. So, you know, people are now starting to see that this is a social experiment that is going to go badly wrong. Because at the end of the day, I think with Australians, as with you guys, is that you push us and push us and push us, and eventually the straw will break. And, you know, and there will be an action. I think getting back to the leadership question, you know, the adage is that, you know, I'd rather live one day as a lion than 1,000 years as a sheep. And, you know, we'll only ever find the lions, you know, we'll only find one lion in 1,000 people. And I think they're there. I think the people that you guys, you know, need are there now. I just don't think that they're ready to take the step which is needed because of, you know, politics and things such as that, yeah?
That's a good point. Screwdriver and I are followed. Screwdriver and I here, we're stopped. And, you know, I'm not uncomfortable with that. I don't care. But I know in the beginning that kind of, that was uncomfortable. This started, by the way, because Screwdriver got a ticket. He said to me, well, what do you think? I said, just pay the damn ticket. The hell, why bother? He said, no, Bill, I got a problem with that. I think I got to make a stand here. I said, just pay the ticket. But he said he's going to make a stand. I said, well, all right, let's see what we're going to do. That's how we actually started this whole program, because he took a stand. I said, pay the damn ticket.
Yeah, because that fat prick on the motorcycle, along with his six buddies, they really love us now because I had them all taken off their bikes, and they lost $830 a month.
And we're not, again, this is clear. We're not adversarial against the police department. People that abuse their authority as a United States citizen, it's my responsibility to curb that in. All we're trying to do is I want the best policeman, I want the best fireman, I want the best dog catcher. That's all I'm asking. If there's something going on, why should we be afraid to go to the city hall? Why should Screwdriver and I be afraid to go downtown the police station? We don't. We go
you
in.
You shouldn't.
That's exactly. But people won't. Oh, no, no. Let's let Screwdriver and Bill deal with it.
Yeah, and it's gone so far as when I got a form letter on the IA complaints, and it goes so far as the when they hand them in, they ask him, did Phil write this for you?
Brad,
that's quite funny, isn't it?
Brad, Phil has a style that I got to tell you. You don't know us at all, but he is a bit more direct and aggressive, and his choice of words are very clear and to the point. We have different styles, but boy, I tell you what,
Well,
any cop that stops Philip.
See, I have a degree from the School of Hard Knocks, and Bill has a degree in smoothology. But
it's different.
Shirley's on the phone, and Shirley's unmuted. If you want to talk, Shirley, thanks for calling in.
Shirley, do you have a question for Brad tonight?
I got a question for all of you.
First of all,
this stuff with the cops and the bikers, it's almost like the cowboys and Indians. The cops have been stopping bikers since way before the 50s, back in the 40s when my husband was riding. And, you know, it isn't going to stop. And when we go before the courts and we ask them to accept the organizations and the corporations that the motorcyclists have become, we're asking them to accept something that the general public has a problem with. It's just like we have a problem with our little gangsters running around and shooting people. Well, we can't ask people to accept them. And the main thing right now is just to be sure that bikers do not get classified as street gangs. If they get classified as street gangs, then it's all going to go underground, and it'll wreck everything. So,
Shirley, hi, Shirley, it's Brad.
Brad.
And how are you going? You're well again. It's a bit later in the day today. It's nice, isn't it?
It is.
Shirley, you're 100% correct. You know, and yeah, look, you know, words of wisdom as always, and I think it's very, very balancing. It's all, you know, it's all well and good for us to have these ideas and things, and at this point in time in Australia, we're forced to go down the path we are. But you're right. I mean, yeah, you are right. And even if we can stop being, you know, placed in the category as just because you're a member of a club, you're automatically a criminal.
Right.
Yeah, if we can stop that, well, we've had a bit of a success, yeah?
That I think that if you can just stay on an even keel with the government and not antagonize it any further than it's already been antagonized, it doesn't help when people from other countries call and spend an entire hour on the phone talking about the things that are wrong in America, about our president that maybe isn't birthed here or whatever. First of all, it's none of their problem. They need to take care of their queen mom and leave us alone. Secondly, they don't need to be rude to anybody on the phone. When somebody says, yeah, I'm not going to open my Facebook to you, who the hell cares if they even have a Facebook? You know, get a life, people. This is, you know, all of this crap, all of this gossip, all of this hating, all of this I got somebody after you shit, it's got to stop. This is what causes a lot of troubles for the clubs. The clubs don't have inner trouble. The clubs have supporter trouble.
Shirley, well spoken again. Words at the moment right out of my own mouth, as I'm sure you're aware. I couldn't have said it better at all. Shirley, you're 100% correct. I mean, firstly, if you're going to talk to someone anywhere, they automatically receive your respect. You don't be rude to them. Secondly, I and many of other people like I, how dare we even consider ringing into the United States of America from another country and criticizing your internal politics? We don't know what's going
on. Exactly, because at our worst, we're better than most countries. And we know we are.
Absolutely.
We broke away from other countries. We are a strong country. And, that's just the way things are. Anyway, I'm not going to stay on here. I said my piece, and that gives you some more to work on. So... everybody have a
Shirley,
good evening. I'm going back to the chat room.
I need to get
thank you for calling in, Shirley.
But again, it goes back to, again, what the lessons that we can learn in Australia and the lessons we can learn in Canada are going to come home to fruition here in America. And the lessons we learn in America...
Last night we had a call from somewhere else, and they criticized everything here instead of, like she said, worried about their own problems over there, which is true.
In this case here, we're sharing information. That's what Brad's talking about.
I talked to Brad to have him call in to give us an update because I think everybody needs to know what's going on because what happens there is coming this way.
The world's too small now to worry about what part of the country you're from.
And what you guys just said and what Miss Shirley said as well, it's all we can do is I think that we're obligated to share with you guys, the experiences that we're having here. And a lot of people, we're not asking people to like what we're doing, but we're just sharing with them what we've been forced to do. And also, if someone can gain one thing from the 1,000 words that I've spoken today, well, I'm really happy that they've got something, And if people think that what we're discussing is a waste of time, well, they're entitled to that opinion as well, and I respect that opinion, getting back to one thing Miss Shirley raised regarding supporters, that's the biggest problem we have here. The biggest problem we have here are social clubs and support groups on the internet. They create chaos and... quite frankly, there's times when you just feel like just headbutting the damn computer, or you go and you spend a day going to visit with five supporters who are having a tiff because the sausages weren't hot enough at the last barbecue. I mean, it's just frustrating as all hell,
Yeah, or things going south when somebody asked somebody for a favor if they had an extra. Next thing you know, it's a fucking riot.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, people just grab stuff that is, so marginal but people gossip and people want to talk and people want to, make out they know a lot of stuff when the reality is they don't. And all it does is create problems. It's like a ripple effect. I mean, if you, and this is off the subject, of course, but if you looked at that, that flaming Facebook as a pond, and someone throws a little rock into that pond, and bang, you watch those ripples go out, And it's unnecessary, totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
But anyway,
everybody is if you get an opportunity. Travel to other countries and see other people have to live life. You'll always appreciate your own country when you come back to it. I have been lucky enough traveled. I didn't know, I never had a feeling of death, but when I was a young man, I wanted to travel all I could while I had my health and I was young. I have traveled pretty much around everywhere, and every time I go out on one of my journeys, I always appreciate what I have in America, as I'm sure you do in Australia and all that. We can appreciate what we have. But we have to realize the world is shrinking. The world is shrinking. We all have to be aware of what's going on in different countries. It will affect.
Well, you
all.
Know, it's, just earlier, you know, it's, that discussion regarding China, you know, and the coup there. The criticality of that is just incredible. The you know, there's a whole host of published, you know, military strategy and military forward planning concepts regarding China. And, you know, then you start looking at changes of government and coups and things like this. Well, it starts to put wobbles on a lot of pretty firm wheels. You know, you start to look at, you know, you look at a lot of potential problems. For example, you know, they've become a major importer of goods from all over the world. And, you know, there's one of the secrets of warfare, as you guys both know, is control the economic capability of the country. It's more important than the military capability. So, you know, there's all of these things that are happening, and that just reinforces your earlier statement regarding the world is shrinking, and you know, and it damn well is.
We have to just look at the fact is who's got what interest in what countries. Let's take just a short time ago when China invaded Tibet. Who came to help Tibet? Let me think. Nobody did. The Dalai Lama had to go into exile into India. India was gracious enough to let him in with all his people. His country destroyed, nuns raped, on and on. Jump over to Kuwait now. Kuwait's invaded.
Yeah.
Everybody's there because America, we got oil over there. Every time there's a country where we have investment, we're there. Otherwise, I listen to these countries where we're not involved in America, so we don't care. How hypocritical can you be?
There's a few places I've been, recently, and every time I've been in them, I'm disgusted with our governments, or my government at least. Zimbabwe, murders in front of you. I mean, Robert Mugabe is totally out of control. And has been for years. And what do the British and the Australians, who caused these problems, by the way, it wasn't the US, it was Australia, it was Malcolm Fraser, the former Prime Minister, who got Zimbabwe its independence. And, you know, you look at that, what do we do about these thousands of murders that are occurring every day? We do nothing. We look at Syria, what's happening there? What do we do about the thousands of murders a day, or probably a week or a month? We did nothing. You know, and it's just, it's Eritrea, you know, Somalia, you know, all these places. It's just it's disgraceful, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, when you just sit back and you take a helicopter overwatch and you get in that position where you can go, what countries are we actually involved in and what aren't we involved in? And it's directly linked to economic capability of the country.
Brad, have you had a chance to get to a Europe for any of the super rallies?
No, but I want to. I want to get that. This year is my year of getting around. I cracked the old 53 this year, so I want to get around and have a look at the super rallies in Europe. I want to ride the Latvian states, you know, during their spring, and plus I want to do Bulldog in the UK and come over to the US as well. So I've got a bit of travelling ahead of me this year.
My wife's health has declined the past couple of years, so we won't be traveling internationally anymore. But I absolutely love the fact that being on a Harley-Davidson, only having like one other motorcycle with me, I could stop in France in a small little town and have a little bite to eat, and maybe five or six store owners would all come over and talk to me and practice their English because I was on a Harley-Davidson. I see big, giant buses come up, and they get out, and the people just ignore them. So I believe for myself that having the Harley-Davidson has enabled me to travel all over Europe and everywhere I go, Paris or Champs-Élysées, anywhere you can imagine, they see the motorcycle, I'm vulnerable, I'm approachable, people walk up. I think I've been blessed to have the motorcycle travel.
Well, that's even like when we're riding in Mexico and they pull out in
Mexico.
Front. They pull out in front and say, where are you going? And they lead the way with the lights on.
Yeah, I just recently was down, very quickly, Brad was down in Mexico a few months ago. And I'm rolling down the road. I'm doing 10 miles over the speed limit. Big deal. But every 30 seconds, I look in both of my mirrors, left and right. A cop coming. I go 10 miles over the speed limit. He pulls up and he said, where are you going? And I said, the town of Rosarito. about 20 miles away. He's got his lights still blasting. They're like a blue lights turning on. He cranked it up another 10 or 15 miles an hour. In fact, we were doing 25 miles an hour over the speed limit now. He escorted me all the way to town. I was going 20 miles with the lights on and blasting. You just...
Did it cost much?
No. I can tell you quickly, one thing about Mexico which people are not comfortable about is they have the army driving up and down the main, the Cueto, which is the toll roads. These guys are armed with machine guns and everything. I don't have a problem with it. It doesn't bother me. But it scares the hell out of people. But, nah, I've never had a problem with Mexico.
Yeah.
And I can't speak
two words.
They're just people. We have people in Perth. We have people in L.A. They're all city people. City people are city people, Brad. Just get out in the country a little bit. There's wonderful people everywhere around the world.
I agree with you, mate. I've spent an awful amount of time in Asia, Borneo, Brunei, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Burma, and then all my time in the Middle East and Africa. And the times that I really enjoy is when there's a four man patrol of us, and we're just out light skinned vehicles, and we go out and we stay with the villagers. And it's really great. I mean, it's peaceful. It's heaven. Yeah, it's absolutely good. But you've probably got a lot of things to do on the show, guys. And I just want to thank you very much, Phil, for the offer to talk about what's been occurring in Australia. And I hope that there's been some benefit to some listeners. And I hope it hasn't put everyone to sleep.
Well, yeah. I want to put Brad, too. I want to know you have an invitation to come on the show anytime. Is that all right with you, brother?
That's it.
Okay, good. I want to make sure that if anything, information you can upgrade or critique or anything with that. I like the fact you think clearly. You're not trying to force anything down anybody. You're just letting people be aware, let them make their own decisions. That I respect in a man. For me to respect you, you've got to respect me, and you do that, and I appreciate you being on the show.
And we got a caller, he's under the weather himself, and he says he has no voice, but he said that he sends much respect your way, Brad.
What state's that from?
That's from Oregon, and that's Sifu Mike.
So thank you very much, I'll get this out. And that was almost a cough. It turned into a stutter instead. My respect to both of you. My respect to everybody who's listening. And lastly, God bless the United States of America, and God bless everything that you have done for our country and everything you will do in the future.
Well,
do in the future.
Well, hopefully, whatever happens there will change.
Who's that, please?
Wait, don't run away, Brad. Hang on.
Who's that, please?
No, I just said hopefully what takes place over there will change and it doesn't lag over here at some point.
Do you want to tell us who you are, where you're calling from? Although I know who it is. You want to tell us who you are?
Oh, me, a goofball.
What state?
Hello, it's Chicago.
I know, but I want everybody to know. Do you have another question for Brad if he takes off?
No, I was just saying whatever happens in Australia, hopefully it doesn't lag here, because it's not going to benefit good wherever it goes. Hopefully it can get better and not for the worse.
Hopefully it'll get better. I think we've got, a battle ahead of us. It's not going to be easy, and I think we're going to, we're going to win some, we're going to lose a lot. But I think eventually, we'll win. It'll take a toll, people fall by the wayside. But as long as it's occurring here, I'm hoping it's not spreading overseas. I hope that people are still watching what's happening here, so that's by government, so that, that'll also give folk overseas in the United States and in Canada the opportunity to learn from our mistakes.
It's not always just your mistakes, it's government. And, the more that you go against the government, they look at you as a terrorist, in some form or another. I don't know, I'm assuming it could be looked that way in Australia. I don't know, I've never been there.
I don't know what the government is like. So I don't want to go under an assumption and have it where I look like an ass, you know, because if you go against government here, they put you on the list. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the Australian government is very easy to describe. If you look at a preschool and divide it in two and give them one chocolate between the two of them, that's the Australian government.
Right.
So it's not like it is here, yeah.
It's chaos. I have to run,
no,
folks.
I mean, I have heard that, yeah. Well, like I said, you know, just keep everybody updated, so, you know.
Lovely hearing from you, and respect to you there, Nora.
And same here, always.
And Brad, I have one request though. Anything that you put on the Save Australian Biker site, please send me a copy of it to my email, and I'll put it on the blog for you. Because right now it's
cool, man. Thank you.
38 countries and almost 65,000 hits.
More people can read about it.
Right.
It's
all about information. I mean, and as we've all you know, heatedly agreed, and you know, we don't have to concur with what everybody says. I mean, but and everyone's got a right to do that, you know. And I know that we all respect people's right to disagree with us. That doesn't mean we have to have a fight about it.
No, not at all.
Which is true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys.
Listen, thanks again for coming in. I hope you're going to be an irregular, sir, because you got some interesting information for all of us. Brad, I hope you get over
that
cold.
Let's make it that way, Phil.
I will, mate.
I've gone a couple of minutes without coughing, so I'll have to have three cigarettes, one up my nose and one in my ear, and then I should be able to get a cough out.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a good day.
All right. See you later, guys. Goodbye now.
Bye.
Nora, when you come on at all, I would always like you to please tell us your name and which state you're from, because people are listening. They don't necessarily want to...
Oh, I'm sorry. I just assume that everybody gets used to me from Tuesday.
It's the way of people tuning in, and they have it. They don't know exactly, you know, where you're coming from. So we want to get all the credit out to you. We want people to know.
I'm coming from crazy, landing on psychotic and ready for slow mode. How's that?
You're just part of our extremely extended dysfunctional family, and we're awful proud to have you in our family.
All the nutcases come here.
No, you.
Oh,
yeah,
that was interesting. You know,
Nora, you need
I don't
to come
know
to,
much about it.
Nora, what? You need to come to Kennedy's Custom Cycles on a Sunday, which I open up now on Sunday. You have no idea who walks in my door on a Sunday. If there's no run going on, the shop is open. People just come. I mean, it's such a strange group of eclectic group.
And how many
group
of them bring you cookies?
I am very fortunate that many of them do realize that, you know...
You don't get fed well at home?
No, my wife actually... Oh, please, I hope she's not listening right now.
I was
she
just
is
kidding.
I told she has a diabetes. In fact, this Wednesday, she's going to go back to the hospital again. They're going to cut more of her foot off. They've cut most of the foot off.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
When they're going to cut below her knee. So she's not as active in cooking and all that. And luckily, I have a lot of friends... bring stuff in,
that'll
even guys in the store, and they bring stuff in for me, a pizza or something with that, or just lunches and all that, so,
right.
You know, I appreciate
well,
that.
Well, no, I mean, that's a wonderful thing right there. Most people don't do that anymore. They don't understand the common decency, but no, I mean, my prayers are with you and your wife, but like I said, I know it's hard, you know, it's just a day at a time, I guess, for it.
Yeah, well, let's see. We got another caller from 514, Bill.
514, you're live. Talk to us, please. Tell us who you are.
Hi, everybody. It's Kitty Cat from Montreal.
Hi.
Yeah.
Did you wear your socks or are you sockless today?
Sockless.
Okay, good.
I don't wear socks.
I know. I just had to make sure. Too funny.
How is everybody?
We're doing
hanging.
Good.
Well,
we're doing...
It's hot in Illinois, I'll tell you that much. We've been on an 8-day stretch of very hot. Very unusual for March.
It's good weather out here. I have a Pendleton on my motorcycle. Better at all. However, last week it rained like a big dog. That's California sissies. We're not used to that rain at all.
Yeah, in the Midwest, we got the soakers.
We have a run coming up next month in Arizona. We'll be heading over there for a little bit. Every now and then I have this need to go out into the desert and burn the evil out of my body. It's going to be a three-day run over in Arizona, so hopefully go there and have some fun.
Y'all have fun.
We will.
Wherever you guys go, you bring fun with you. It's a package deal.
Probably the nicest thing anybody said about me, but I want you to know that I really do try to bring fun with me.
I know.
A bit shy about encouraging people to find your own level of fun. For example, if I'm on stage and I bring you, Nora, on stage, maybe...
Oh, we're going to have fun.
Maybe...
I'll make you
right,
laugh.
I look in your eyes, and if your eyes tell me, okay,
yeah,
I'm a little
right.
bit bold,
that's
I'm
enough.
A little bit... I'm going to go all the way. Or I look into your eyes, and I see you're a little bit afraid, we're going to tone it down a little bit. If I look in your eyes, and you're petrified, we're going to make it nice and easy. So I tell everybody, just be yourself. I'll find out where you're supposed to. And everybody has a comfort zone. If I get you on
right.
stage, I want everybody to laugh with you. I never want anybody to laugh at you. I never embarrass anybody. We just have some of the most outrageous stuff you can matter. Based upon
I have been on stage numerous times, and I'm not stage fright at all.
There we go. Well, some people stay close to the stage and don't want to get up on stage. That's fine, too. I'm not worried about that.
Oh, no. I'm one of those where you get me on there. Oh, God. Anything could happen. No, just kidding. That was supposed to be funny. Okay. Over
no, we're laughing because my mother says that about me. I never found a microphone or a mirror I didn't like.
Well,
so
you know,
I was born with a microphone.
Like, and it's like when people tell you you got a radio, a face for radio.
Well, they tell me that a lot, too. I've had a hard life, guys. I do want to say that it is sad that our best adventures are in Mexico, not America. We're usually shut down in America if we can go crazy. But when we're in Mexico, we're pretty much the sky's the limit over there. I've always enjoyed that. This is the best country in the whole world. I would never live anywhere. I'll travel around the world, but I'd never leave America. But I got to tell you, a bunch of naked people getting crazy in America, they're kind of frowned on that.
What is it about Thursday? Art started that, and you still have to insist on Thursdays with naked something. Okay, let's get over that. Let's move on with the show. What do you guys have for a topic? Okay.
Well, we have the naked news coming up here.
Oh, here we go.
It's not Commando Day.
No.
God, we can't. We spoke a whole hour with Brad without mentioning anybody, didn't we? No,
I
that's
know.
Probably my world record.
Yeah, wasn't it? Wow.
That was a long, long conversation about not mentioning.
You're really long-winded.
Well, this week in New Hampshire, Bill, that they had the Laconia thing was going on. There was even, signs and everything, live free or die highways, back roads.
Well, that's their model, right?
That guy got that everybody excited about loud pipes thing.
Yeah.
So they want to dial back the noise level to,
That's everywhere.
I'm getting
so tired of that. Loud motorcycles. Well, why are you looking at that a little bit? Then we have some runs coming up. I wish you guys could come out to, my brother Mike Kennedy's in my motorcycle shop. Next month, Screwdriver and I will all be down there. We have a run for the Blessing of the Motorcycles. We have some motorcycle parties which are for the more heavier clubs. And this one coming up next month is for all of the clean and sober Christian bikers, independent. Everybody wants to come together. And I actually have a minister who's going to get up and bless the motorcycles. Anybody
that
who raised
the
it,
one that was on before, wasn't he?
Once a year.
Yeah.
The Christmas one that we have all the, that's where all the trouble comes from always. Well, not trouble, it's just...
Shit happens every once in a while, We get that many people together, so there's always something going on.
But not one of the, with the bike blessing. Those people are a little bit more subdued, I think. But hopefully, I'm going to be with a motorcycle organization in Yuma, and they've got a, they've guaranteed me that we're going to take this to the max, so I'm hoping this is fun. So anyway, just quickly, you and I are going to be Saturday, in case you've forgotten. We have a program with the Bikers Against Diabetes.
Right.
We're going to be on stage. It's a prelim ride, I guess.
Right.
So Philip and I do an awful lot of work with the Bikers Against Diabetes. My wife is losing her foot because of diabetes, but we've been doing it for many, many, many years before. I have just suffered so many of my friends that have died of diabetes. We've been working on that. So we have that event going on Saturday. We're off Sunday. And then pretty much the next month, you and I got small runs and then Arizona.
Saturday, you know, we can't be in two places at once either.
That's always the problem.
We're
going
to have to figure that out.
Well, last Saturday, we were supposed to be in three places, technically.
That's true, too.
Thank goodness we scored on this one. It rained so heavy last Saturday, we didn't go up to it, but we physically, they kind of want us in three places. And, you know, friends want you to be there, but you can't be everywhere, boys and girls.
No. Kind of hard to split yourself in three.
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know.
Well, yeah, but you guys got to understand, sometimes I got to go north, he goes south.
That's it. We sometimes.
And then you have to meet in the middle. Yeah.
No, they always, I go somewhere and they go, where's Phil? And then he's up north. Hey, where's Bill? And Bill, this is too much stuff going on in California, boys and girls. I'm not a social butterfly. When I was growing up, we had one motorcycle run every 3 months. God damn it, that was a lot. Now, every weekend, I am shaking hands, schmoozing on stage somewhere. So.
Yeah, pretty soon, we're going to have to get you a campaign poster and kissing babies.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I hope that if I ever run for office in my life, that I have enough friends that would vote me out.
Why?
Because you would want me to remain who I am and not have me change into this program. Every politician Philip and I have known over the course of the years has had to sacrifice to get their policies.
So much.
They have to give, they add bills onto their bills, and it's like slowly it eats you away like a flesh-eating disease. Every politician, they went there with good intentions, but no, I don't want to sacrifice anything I have. And plus, like I said to everybody when I do speak, I'm hoping one day to find somebody that I can follow. But to talk about a Bill Kennedy as a leader, guys, the bar is not high enough. We got to find somebody much higher than my level. That's not false humility. It's just a fact, Jack.
Right.
I understand.
And we're gonna have to take a short break, Bill, because we're losing.
Yeah, you guys got winded.
No, it's not that, but we're losing the sound too.
What are you guys doing over there? Really? Come on, get with the program.
Yeah, I know. But
well, give us some music, huh?
I am. This okay. Song's called "All We All Fall Down" by One Republic.
Sound on your word of faith.
fact,
you seem to like those guys who are TV actors that play a motorcycle club.
Oh, here we go. You seem to like those type of people.
But you know what? Let me deviate slightly because they have told us to please tell everybody, hey, they are not a motorcycle organization. They really are just actors. Okay, pass it on. Let's talk about very briefly. We have some friends of ours that have some music coming up next season. Illusion Motorcycle.
Right.
Rusty and Attica 7.
Right.
They good friends of ours. They have a band. They have some music coming out. Attica 7, listen to that when it comes up next season. I know it'll be strong music, certainly, like that.
Right.
We have got a statement over here from Maid Marian, and we put a call in to the lady, and she's not gotten back to us yet. So regarding the casting call at Kennedy's Custom Cycles,
okay.
We will follow through on that.
And we got.
And if not, we'll give that girl's personal phone number out.
She'll beat the hell out of her. That's
it. Who's on Skype?
This should be John from New Jersey.
How do you know that?
Trust me.
John, are you out there, please? John, you out there?
John.
John from Jersey?
The caller on Skype?
Well, I hope you're happy now. You scared
okay,
him off.
No.
No, it's the way you said it. You couldn't have said it nicer to him? Now you get him upset. He doesn't want to talk to us. All right. That's just great.
Maybe next time you should let one of the ladies ask. No.
No, he's such a mean person. He was at my shop on Sunday, and I had two pretty tough guys there. He came walking in. Oh, God, I'm going to bust your balls on this one. He's there for about 15 minutes, and when he left, these two tough guys go, wow, why is he always so mad? And I said, I'm not mad. That's his personality.
Hey, fellas, can you hear me?
Yes, there we go.
There you go.
John from Jersey, is that you?
That's me, brother, in the flesh.
John, what do you want to talk about tonight? We're glad you came aboard.
All kinds of shit. First of all, I want to give Phil a physics lesson, a lesson in quantum physics. Now, if he was a subatomic particle, he could be in two places at one time. But,
is this the Big Bang Theory, Joe?
A bigger bang than that.
John, you know you swallow words for us, I'm afraid.
I did get a degree, but
it's in psychology. It won't help me the rest of the stuff there.
Well, I'm listening to Brad's... Brad's got an interesting situation over there in Australia, and what I'm thinking is that you really have to look behind the scenes in all of this and basically find out who the shot callers are. Now, from what I know about the Australian government and Canadian government, they have strong ties with Britain, and nothing happens in any of their... You know, they are colonies, so to speak, without the Brits and British intelligence, you know, knowing nothing goes on, good or bad, that they don't know about and don't have a say in. So they could be putting up, you know, you never know who's behind the scene, what kind of competition you're facing. Is there a power play going on? There's just a lot of things that you don't know. And, this might look like... just the local crackdown, but the bigger picture is that, from my perspective, this goes across boundaries and it goes across borders, and it's always with intelligence agencies, it's always with state intelligence agencies. Nothing happens without them in the mix. You know, even here locally with police forces and sheriff's departments and state troopers, the security agencies, they have their people in the mix. They're funneling billions of dollars into, you know, local governments, local and state governments. All that money's filtering down. And so you can't look at what's happening on just one level because there's a bigger picture here. And, I don't know all the intricacies of Australian politics, but I think if you were to scratch around down there and you might...
If you got to scratch around down there, I think you need to go to the doctor.
I'm saying scratching around in the dirt. There's a bigger picture here. You know, you're right about whatever's happening over there. You know, heads up, folks, it's coming this way. But I think at the upper level, the upper echelon, and all these governments cooperate. Even the guys that look like they're bad guys, you know, once you reach a certain level, you find out there aren't any bad guys. They're all on the same team. So, you know, that's just my take on what's going on over there in Australia. There's you never know who's vying for any kind of, you know, position over there and why they're doing it. So, but the only answer, it's the system that you've got to use the system. You have to know how that system works. You've got to be just as good at the game as they are, because it's the only way to beat them. You know, they've got you outnumbered, outgunned, outmanned. So you just got to be as good at the game as they are. And that'll be the only thing that saves us over here is, you know, we don't have the same tradition that the Brits and the Australians and the Canadians do. And but we got a different, you know, we operate under a different different umbrella. We've got a lot more latitude over here. That's why they can't take us out now, but maybe somewhere down the line, I think they've got, you know, that's what they've got in mind, is to take everybody out.
But they're doing a good job of keeping us separated. As long as they can fragment, as they can keep us picking at each other, they're just going to sit back and just watch us. That's the issue I just cannot understand. And as I said, I speak at some events. As I'm looking into the crowd, I'm looking, is the man or woman, is the leader that I'm looking for, they're not stepping up. Information should go from Canada to Australia to England back to America, but we don't have a network among ourselves. We don't have a network in America. We have got MROs across America. They got their own agenda. I don't see them working together like they should. And MROs are always calling me up. Oh, you got a beef against MROs. No, I don't. Get off your lazy asses and work together. Do something. I'll be happy. We, as long as we continue to keep ourselves separated, the government's happy. I believe that completely.
Well, the British intelligence and the way the Brits have been working things for hundreds of years is they're the past masters at divide and conquer, and that's how they were able to carve up most of the world and stick it in their back pocket. It's divide and conquer, and those guys are good at it, and they've got it down pat, and they've just exported that over here. That's why you don't see any real solidarity, because there's so many factions that, you know, they create all these little groups that look like they're opposition groups, and you know, years down the line, when you've wasted a lot of time and energy, and you find out that they didn't accomplish anything. Nothing was accomplished because there was just too much diffusion of you know, power and influence and focus. So if you're all over the board, you're not going to accomplish anything. It's going to have to be a refocus. You know?
And I'm not naive enough to think that the whole issue is the anti-helmet law. No, we have so many issues on the table to deal with here that the helmet law, it is a issue. It's not the only issue. I just don't know how I can get that out to other people. We're not out here saying, get rid of the helmet law, get rid of the helmet law. We're saying we have a lot of issues to deal with, but we don't have communication. We don't have the skills. We don't have the power. We don't have the ability to want to sit down like we are right now and discuss the subject.
Well, that's because we're big picture people, Bill. I mean, we all see the big picture. I mean, we wouldn't be here tonight if we all didn't see the need to look at the bigger picture on all this. And it's not local. Your problem isn't local. You know, there's an old saying about all politics is local. Well, no, it's not all local. It's international. You know, if you think it's all local, you're going to be focused on all the wrong. You know, you'll be looking at the left, and those guys will be out on the right, and they'll be flanking you out. And that's how, you know, we're lucky over here because we're doing pretty good keeping them at bay. But, you know, there's a lot of victories. There's been a lot of victories won, you know, from what I can see over the last year or two in a lot of different areas. But it's hit and miss. And eventually everybody's just going to get worn out and tired. And, you know, you're not going to be able to fight everybody. You know, you look at all these laws that they're passing in Congress, it's like every week there's a new law out. You know, you beat down the end at NDAA, they didn't beat that down, but, you know, the minute that gets in trouble, next week or next month, some congressman or group of senators, they put together a new law, and by the time you get the word out, you know, they've pretty much got all that stuff sewed in, man. Those guys pencil all that stuff in, they phone it in, and they're, you know, and it's just not enough of us doing this. I mean,
your statement, though, I mean, it was very accurate in the fact that I want to mention a few names
Not that long ago, we had great, great giants walking among us, a man named Quigney, a man named Bianco, a man named, last name Red Baron. These were giants that were walking around us, and we were letting them do so much work, and we were just sitting and listening to what they were doing. They just got worn to a frazzle because they were trying to wear too many hats. I just don't see the caliber of leaders, and Screwdriver, jump me if I'm wrong.
No.
I'm telling you a few years ago, and I hope you know the name Quigney, I hope you know the name of Red Baron, I hope you heard the name of Uncle. We truly had giants walking around. I say that not to stroke their ego, but I just don't see the leadership in the motorcycle world what it was 10, 15 years ago.
No.
Okay, go.
So, well, it's because we're too there's too much fractionalism. It's a fractured egocentric mix. It's a big ego mix now, you know. And I think in part, Bill, that's due to 30 or 40 years of just running wild and doing whatever the hell you want to do. And now, you know, you sow the wind and you reap the whirlwind. Well, right now we're reaping the whirlwind of just a lot of shit that went down for 30 years that, for another reason, shouldn't have went that way. And you know, we're not in the mix that Australia's in, and we've got a better chance of nipping that in the butt than they do, only because we've got a different mix over here.
A lot of people won't tolerate it, but it's like, yeah. Again, like we said. Bill, and Bill said earlier when he touched on it that 9 out of 10 people are going to wait and let somebody else do it.
Yeah. I always worry about that adage from World War II, and it said they came for the Jews. What did I care? I wasn't Jewish. They came for the Russians. What did I care? I wasn't Russian. They came for the gypsies. What do I care? I wasn't gypsies. And then one day they came for me, and there was nobody to care at all. So it's us little outposts, like yourself on the East Coast and people from different countries. But we're such a minority, and I don't know why more Americans, more people across the world, free-thinking people, aren't stepping up and saying, we're not happy with this. We need to do something. My friends, your friends, Phil, you and I, they'll talk trash in a bar, but they won't spend the 5 or 10 minutes extra to get something done. I'm not bad-mouthing my friends. My friends are all pretty much dysfunctional, but they're my dysfunctional friends. They just simply, they think that the subject is too much. They think the mountain is too tall to climb. You just take it one step at a time. Like you're doing out through the East Coast right now. You're just letting people be aware of stuff.
Where
are the strong women leaders?
I'll surely just see. You ever wonder what would happen if bikers were a union?
Oh, surely. If I could just see a leadership in my own area, California, if I could see again a man or a woman that would step up to the plate and say, I'm speaking on behalf of Yamaha, Kawasaki, Suzuki, Harley-Davidson. I'm speaking on behalf of American riders.
She's saying, like,
that
said,
would make me a hell of a...
You would not even have to, you know, you would not even have to.
No.
You need Lucky Luciano. You need a lucky biker, a Lucky Luciano biker type. Some guy that sets up a commission and one guy who just steps up to the plate, takes over everything, and eventually just corrals everybody in, you know, one by hook or crook, and you get everybody under one umbrella. If that were to happen, there isn't anything you couldn't do or you couldn't stop or couldn't influence, you know, because that would work.
But don't forget that right after World War II, Lucky Luciano, they reneged on all their promises, kicked him back to Italy and said, get out of our country, don't ever come back. They never to my knowledge, I've never read in a history book, we never acknowledged what the Mafia did in preparing our invasion of Italy. We never talked about what the crime syndicate did. And, of course, we used criminals in those days. We used anybody we could to win. But once he got involved with the government, he got kind of shafted. I'm afraid as we get involved with the government, we're always going to come up with the weak side. But I swear to you, I would just love to see my lifetime a man or a woman that would get on this phone or get up and make a speech, and we could all say, that person is for us. And I just don't see it because we are fractionalized.
Well, and it's nobody, Bill, nobody can think globally. And, you know, I have the same situation here myself with all the people I know that are in this jam, that kind of a jam. They're up against it here, there. Like Phil said, you'd show them what they need to do. You'd point it out to them, even set it up for them. And that last minute, it's just too much damn effort to do it. And, you got to be careful about who you parcel out all that, all your charity to, because you'll be all over the place, and, and you can only spread yourself so thin, and after a while, all your interests are falling short, and everybody else is doing well. So you got to kind of look out for that. And if you find somebody that you think is really deserving of, some tutelage and helping them out and cluing them in on, this is how you do it, and, fine, and spend some time with him, but 9 out of 10 of them, they're going to go by the wayside, and they're going to take you with them.
Yeah.
You got to be careful.
It wears you down. I tell everybody it's like I'm a giant statue, and somebody's got a little chisel and a hammer.
Somebody just stroked you. Nobody has charisma like Mr. Kennedy.
No, well... that line, thank you very much, but I assure everybody again, I don't set the bar high enough to be any type of leader in our community at all. There will be somebody come out there one day, and that's the person I'm waiting for.
Well, they can't, because they won't let you be a leader, because they think we're all, we're so deep in organized crime that it's crazy.
I know. Plus, one of the problems we have at all the meetings is I never give up the microphone.
I know.
Nobody else is ever going to speak, damn it. But, I just realized that... what you made a point about us getting burnt out, Philip and I were fortunate enough to see some of the giants, as I said, that walked throughout this land earlier in the motorcycle world, and I saw what it did to them, and I saw how the motorcycle community turned on them.
Yep.
And Philip and I don't work at that level. We don't have the gray matter. We're going to do what we can, but if everybody would do what they could, to whatever degree, man, I'm telling you, we can make a difference, but...
Well, if everybody's down together instead of divided.
Yeah.
Phil, it's tough reaching across all the different clubs and groups and organizations because it's very difficult to bridge that whole, to span that whole.
Yeah, but if people would look at it as, you don't have to forgive and forget. It's a thing of standing united as a front.
Well, you got to change your the game plan has to change. If the game plan doesn't change and the way that everybody's been doing business, if that doesn't change, you're going down the tubes. All of us. Everybody is going down the tubes.
Well, everybody, the lifestyle is just going to go.
Well.
If everybody wants to have that lifestyle, then they need to all stand up as a front, not all divided. Because if everybody's standing divided, then it's never going to work.
Well, in the 1960s, I used to travel. I had a K-model Sportster, so I didn't travel across country as much as I'd like to, but I went up and down the coast and all that. Nobody in the 1960s gave a damn who I was or where I came from. I stopped at all the big major club players. Hey, welcome aboard, brother. Have a seat and all that. I'm going to blame right now the drugs. And drugs started coming into the whole motorcycle world. I think we started to lose the word brotherhood. I think that started to go by the wayside. I like the fact that today, when I talk to some of the different players, they're realizing more and more the need for them to be clean and sober. I'm not preaching to anybody being clean and sober, but I like the fact that they're realizing that, hey, we are a motorcycle club first. That means so much to me because the 60s was wide open. In the 70s, I had club people running around in Corvettes. I had club people running around in limos. And I thought, what the hell happened to this program?
It didn't take long. Well, that was that money came in fast and quick. And the clubs were pretty much infiltrated by the organized drug dealers. That I saw that myself in that's something that happened along. That is so ingrained now that how you back yourself off from that. I don't know how you back yourself off from that. It's going to be like a withdrawal. If anybody thinks it's going to be easy to just back off that, that association that goes back decades. I mean, this is not a problem that just cropped up in 2000. I mean, you got to go way back to the 60s and early 70s to find out why everybody's in the mess they're in right now. It's 40 years worth of, you know, bad karma.
Right. I do appreciate the fact that most of the major players are starting to realize the importance of being more clean and sober, or only taking their drug of choice at their home or something like that. They're not out in the bars anymore. They're not driving around. They're realizing the importance of being in charge of their life. So that
is... They've changed the image, too. But, you know, today, it's hard to tell who's a bike, who belongs to, you know, a club or an organization as opposed to who's a doctor or a lawyer. But one thing that looks promising is the whole image changes. It's not that easy to single out, that long-haired, rough biker image. I mean, I didn't give it up, but I see that. It's you could be in a supermarket with, you don't know, there could be any club member from any club could be standing right next to you, and you don't know because they look just pretty much like everybody. That's one good thing, is that image has changed. You know, that old image. But
the image has changed, but the directive is going back to being a motorcycle club. Huh. That's where I'm seeing in the past 5 years the more and more emphasis placed on the motorcycle aspect of it. I never liked the fact that when I saw motorcycle club people driving around in a car and they had their colors. I think there's something, and every club's got their own right to set their own precedent. But when I started realizing the past 5 years, more and more and more emphasis placed upon motorcycle club. That's making me feel that we're turning in a good direction, maybe.
Well, you know, it's going to be a slow turnaround, but I think the positive thing is the image is changing, and they're getting a little more hip with PR, how to put yourself out. That whole image is changing. If they could sort of blend into the rest of the organizations out there, where you really can't tell who belongs to a 1% club and who might belong to the AMA, then you're in a much better place, because you don't stand out and you can't be singled out. You know, if they can't tell you the difference between you and the next guy, that gives you a certain security, because it's you're in the mix, but you're not actually part of that mix. And
this is constantly changing. Everything about our life is changing. Everything's changing around us. I accept that. I try, when I talk to people about what's happened in the 1960s, they go, "What? How the hell old are you?" I am that old. I am old enough to realize what California was like, what Mexico was like, what Arizona was like in the 1960s, what being back east, the Midwest, was in the 60s, going to Sturgis in the late 60s, early 70s. It's not that the old days were better, they're just different. I certainly don't want to go back to a kickstart-only motorcycle. God, no, I'm glad I got a pushy button thing on my motorcycle. But it's changing all around us, but it's the fact that we're fractionalizing ourselves, the fact that we're giving up our freedoms, it's just irritating me. There was a time I could get all my tickets in California, run across the next state, Arizona, get a new driver's license. I'm good to go. Of course, now with the event of this devil-inspired computer, and we know it's made by the devil, now every state is on one giant computer. They know what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. It's changing. Either Area 51 gave us the computer or the devil. I'm not sure, one or the other, but I'm thinking it's the devil. We have got to realize the fact that it's a different world, and all I'm asking is we should try to make it a better world. What are you writing at?
Okay, here we go.
You're going to start some
No, I'm not going to start some shit. People, Shirley says people are accepting it because she has, your doctor might even have tats now. Mine does. Because they're accepting tats, now we need them to get to accept the bikers. And Marion says, well, I say the Independence United be better, if that makes sense. And Shirley says, I remember the 50th. I didn't come around, and Marion says, I didn't come around to 74, but I was 14 then. And then Brad writes in, was Mexico part of California then?
Well, California's part of Mexico then, so that's close enough. That's close enough.
It is now.
Now Mexico's taken over, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's sad, too, because I come from the East Coast education where I spoke Francais. I studied Francais. I'm surrounded. Ain't nobody speaking Francais out here. I cry, say, to Espanol. Man, I studied Latin. Yeah, that's a good subject, Latin. I need that an awful lot, for Christ's sakes. Where the hell was Spanish when I was growing up? And where the hell was tacos and burritos when I was growing up here? And where was Kasha when I was growing up? A good friend of mine just sent a nice message to us, so let's thank that then. They can't see that, can they?
No.
Every now and then while
I can
talk,
see it.
Who said that?
I did.
Who said that?
No. I can see it.
Oh, no, you can't see that. Every now and then, a friend of ours sends a picture in the middle of a poignant conversation. I sometimes deviate a little bit because I'm twisting my head to see, is that humanly possible? Can the enough of that subject. All right, I'm back again.
Yeah, there's things that can be done.
Yeah.
What is that, the voice of experience?
Once I was a king. Once I was a king, I'm going to tell you. Oh, anyway. So let's get back to the East Coast again.
Somebody was talking about the French thing.
Where is this?
I don't know.
Oh, Mamzo, parlez vous français? Mamzo, on peut?
Oui, je parle très bien en français, vous?
Oh, where we go. We have got Canadians in today. Yes, I forgot that. Yes. I never learned in school about that sock song, but let's get back to the East Coast. Okay. Are you still with us? John, you still with us?
Hey, I'm hanging in. I'm just
Hey, John, stop me when I deviate. For Christ's sakes, pay attention to the program, will you?
you keep it free flowing. It doesn't bother me that it kind of goes all over the board sometimes, but I was just interested in Brad's. That's why I called in and got online, because Brad's situation is something that everybody's really got to take a look at, because that's how they do things. That's how that's how the big players, you know, set things up. It's you got.
John, hang on for a second. We have a lady that's on the air that wants to ask you a question.
Yeah, sure.
Fran, you live? Fran,
I'm
you
live.
On the air? Hi, Fran.
Yeah.
We got John. We got
Hi.
People
Hi,
all
Fran.
On.
Hi, Fran.
What do you want to talk about tonight, dear?
And I'm sorry, but I just now got online, so I'm not even sure what you've done this evening. I'm guilty.
I'm not either. It's okay.
I'm guilty. And I don't mind being guilty, because I'll fight it every day.
Listen, I'm going to put you back off for a second so you can listen to what John was referring about. He was talking about Australia and some of the problems we had over there. Oh, by the way, Fran Fuego, in Arizona next month?
Are you inviting me? Are you inviting me?
Fran, you're a lady. I can't take you to Arizona because I'm not a gentleman, unfortunately. And so we'll get back to John then. John,
okay.
Take me out of this spot here for a second, all right?
I'm going to rescue you one more time, Bill, and that's going to be the end of it right there. This is the little scenario that Brad got into tonight. That's a good. It focuses in on what you really have to pay attention to. Australia's concentrated enough so that you can look at what's going on there, and they've got a little more homogenous mix over there. I don't think they're as fractured as we are. Okay, we've got all kinds of groups, all kinds of people, all kinds of factions. I think the Australians pretty much are one people. They've got an identity. You know, and Americans don't have that identity. It's we're Americans, and that means a whole lot of different things to a whole lot of different people. Brad had a good point that they don't have any local police force like we do here. They don't have townships and boroughs, and you know, and every little town has their own police force, and then they got the sheriff's office. They pretty much have a layer down there that's just like one big boot. It just comes right down on them. There's no buffer in between the average person and their federal police. You know, we've got some buffers. It's not that easy for them to just come in and kick you in the head. You've got local police you can deal with. If you've got a problem, you can go to you can sit down and talk to the chief of police, or you can go up to the sheriff's office, so that we're in a little better position, I think, than they are, than the Australians are. That's just my take on it. And maybe they don't. But they're a little more, focused on their problem than we are. And see, you know, that's good and it's bad. It all depends what kind of mix you're in.
Hmm. Fran, did you want to jump in and ask John a question? Fran, you still with us?
I'm still here.
Okay. Well, did you want, we're talking about the problems in Australia, and John's talking about reiterating a bit that what Brad was saying. Do you want to jump in, say something about that? I just want to hear your voice.
Oh, is that all it is? That's it. It is so nice to be wanted. Well, I guess because I really don't know that much about Australia, other than it's very big, and if you plan on covering it all, it's not going to happen in a week. As far as motorcycles go, do they differentiate between lady riders and male riders, and do they pick on one more than the other?
You know, Fran, I want to jump in at that. We actually have a lot of women who listen to the show and type, and I want to mention right now Maid Marion. Why is it that we have so many women that want to type a statement yet don't want to come on and talk to us? Surely you must realize that I'm easy to talk to. Screwdriver, we don't want to embarrass anybody. But we have so many people that write comments. I would love for you to feel comfortable one day just to come on the show and share with us.
Pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone.
The numbers,
I like that.
The number is 347-826-7753.
There you go. What's that KPS program, you know, where you send money in, they're saying, pick up the phone.
Right.
Call us now. Because I'm looking at what a tremendous list of people that are sending things in to us. And I hope one day everybody's comfortable because John's a good guy. He's not going to bite you hard.
You never tell. you can't be sure of that, but that's all right. Well, we won't go there.
If I had the money, I'd fly there and he can give me the tour. And I'd ride a bike anywhere. Oh, wait, I've done that. I've taken the bike in the desert. And they looked at me kind of strange because I couldn't understand why a street bike was a flag person out in the middle of the desert in the soft sand. I just couldn't keep up with them, though. That was the only problem.
You know, we got a statement up here by Kitty Cat. She's saying if she can call in, all those girls should call in. We appreciate that. I have to point out, everybody, in case you heard that little blurb, we've got less than a minute left. Before we wrap up, is there anything interesting that we haven't talked about, anything important? Anybody want to jump in special?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. We need to say, we need to stick together, we're all friends, and have a great night. Okay.
You know, we start to fall downhill. So all we got to do is we start it. I swear to you, it will grow and grow. If more people like us, this big dysfunctional family, because this is not Screwdriver, my show. This is our show.
Right.
Everybody that's involved in the show. We want this to continue. We want people to have communication. By the way, anybody looking for me in Arizona, I will be at the Yuma Bike Run. If you don't know what I look like,
I
guarantee.
But I'll wish you guys a great trip.
Thank you very much. Anybody with Yuma, please come up and talk to me. If you don't know who I am, what I look like, I guarantee you, people will point it out.
And, John, if you want to pick up this Tuesday, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, I'm gonna, there's a couple of national law cases, one or two law cases that I'll maybe talk up next Tuesday. And maybe something that everybody should keep an eye on because it's pretty important.
Okay.
It is important. And Tuesday, I'm not here. So I mostly talk about women. So Tuesday is a wonderful time to talk about court cases.
Okay. That'll be legal.
Can we be who I am? You
so
know?
What we're going to do, Bill, is we're gonna close this out with Lou Everlasting. It's called What It's Like. And
I never heard this before.
It's an appropriate song.
I don't know if it is or not. I never heard it. We'll be the judge of that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good song.
Good night to all my friends.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Good night. Yeah.
Bill.
Well, that's the first time I heard. That's not that bad a song.
No,
right.
And,
no, that's a good song.
And just want to say good night, everybody. And Mike, I hope you feel better.
Yeah, Mike, get over it. Brad, hope your throat's okay. And Philip, I want to say thank you for a nice show tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you for keeping us on track again. And for all of our friends, thank you for keeping Bill on track. We know how he gets lost.
Well, no, you're fine. That's Phil we have to worry about.
Bill.
Oh, here you go. There you go. Friends. What would I do without friends?
Feel the love.
I know.
Say.
We love you, too.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.